Welcome one, welcome all, Step Right Up Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 27 is coming at you. Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. And for more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and with me, as always, is...
your co-host, Brian.
Awesome. And we are here to bring you episode number 27, Join Me or Die. Classic line from Empire Strikes Back. We're going to talk about great gaming nights, so if you don't come to my gaming night, I may threaten you. That makes for a great night. Everybody will show up. Lots of fun other stuff that we've got coming at you. This is our first episode, kind of post-Gen Con. So we did the one in the car, but now we've kind of digested some of those games and gotten back on a schedule. Actually, we're a week late here because we came back. I went on vacation. Then Brian went on vacation.
So now we're
both back together. So it took us this long. We got a lot of stuff in the works.
I think we needed that time apart after that long Gen Con.
We did have a lot of
journey.
Time together. But we did well, though. So
yeah,
that was good. So, Brian, yesterday I stopped by Dollar Tree, and I picked up the 10 little mini bins. Have you seen these things?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's like a little plastic tub with a top, like you could put an egg in there or like a couple spoonfuls of peanut butter or something.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is going in a different direction, though.
Yeah, so 10 of them for a dollar, so I bought 70 of them.
70 of the 10 packs?
No. Oh. 7 10 packs. So $7, I've got 70 little containers. So I ran home to fill up Terra Mystica, and I can't even fit half of the pieces from one Terra Mystica color into the bin. So I'd have to have two bins, like black would need two and blue would... So I'd have to have 20 bins in there, which...
I was thinking you were saying the 70 component... Those 70 things didn't fit half a Terra Mystica.
Gotcha. Yeah, no. So...
That would have been rough.
So they're pretty teeny tiny, so I got to figure out which things to put them in. But it's a good problem to have, and I figure if it's a $7 mistake. But I was excited. They also have, like, bigger ones that actually snap shut, fancy ones. And they're 3 for $1. So those might work pretty well. And they're kind of colored. They're like green, blue, and red. So you could have those. So anyway, if you're out there and you're listening and you're looking for storage solutions that are cheaper, Dollar Tree, try it out. I don't know what they have in other areas. I think that's national. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess I usually just go. I mean, I'll use deck boxes for cards and just little baggies, like Ziploc baggies usually.
Yeah, baggies aren't bad for pieces, but I think of the stuff where, like, it's the resources you want to draw. Like, you don't have to take the baggie, dump it out on the table, find a bowl, like, it's right there. So, we'll see how it goes. See how it goes. Awesome. We got some upcoming events. I want to announce the first one, because I'm super excited.
Go for it.
So, if you haven't heard, we've got Game Days with the Dice Tower. The Dice Tower crew... Tom Vassell, Z Garcia, Sam Healy are flying up from Florida, and then Eric Summer is going to drive up from where he lives in Connecticut. We're going to have them all at the store, and they're coming for 3 days. So they're going to be here September 15th, 16th, and 17th. So it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And they're coming to just hang out at the store. They're going to play games with customers that stop in. They're going to run a couple events. They're doing like an event that night and some various other things.
Yeah, just to clarify, I mean, it's going to be late Thursday night.
Correct.
So it's not just all, they'll probably be getting to the store around 9 o'clock Thursday night. Friday's going to be the real bulk of it, where we're going to have it open. Like, they're going to be there basically the whole day.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're going to have to get like food and stuff in there. They need meals. Don't worry, Brant. They'll still be playing games. And then Saturday, they're going to be leaving a little earlier. They're going to be leaving at 4. So, you know, just to be aware of it. Like, I don't want people to come down thinking, oh, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all day, every day, you know.
Yeah. But, I mean, Thursday night is the board game club.
Right.
So, come out. You know, come out at 6:30 or whatever, whenever you get out of work, and you can hang out and play some of your favorite games before, and then when they arrive, you know, if we're playing games with them or want to meet and greet or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, by all means, you don't have to wait till 9 o'clock to come down. So that should be really good. And then in addition, on Saturday, like after they leave, you know, people will still be there playing games. So still a fun event, still a thing we're coming down to. So again, it's September 15th, 16th, 17th. You definitely want to stop by and check out what's going on. That is Game Days with the Dice Tower.
Yeah. And then, you know, a little before that, I guess coming up this weekend, so this will force you to get... Right? It'll be this weekend, won't it?
Did I have the wrong date?
Yeah. Yeah, so actually in 2 days we're going to have our monthly prototype event at the shop. So it'll be this Sunday, August 28th. From 12 to 6 p.m. And we're going to have a similar thing to the past couple months where people come in, they have designed some prototypes and such. There will be a bunch of people there ready to play test. You know, I don't know like how many people are actually going to be bringing in games this time, so it might also be a little bit more of a workshop environment where the goal is to kind of get people using that creative side and trying to, like, think of all these mechanisms and mush them together to come up with, like, a, you know, a cool game that we can kind of try out in the shop, and, you know, it's unique to us. And I think that's the cool part, because it's fun seeing the brain working for, like, you know, a bunch of people, or just seeing how much dedication people do have, and that's really awesome. So, yeah, this will be our third game prototype workshop at the Portal, so come down Sunday, August 28th. It'll be fun.
Nice. Those are our upcoming events. Just a quick note, the Silk City Board Game Group, they're going to kind of come over to the store for the Dice Tower Day. So if you usually attend that event and hear about it on here, they're going to be joining us. So that'll all be together when you come to see that. So that won't be happening in September, but it will be happening.
It will be happening at the Portal.
At the Portal. There you go. That's the best way to explain it. So that's still on there. Awesome. Let's talk about what's on your table. So, I'll kick it off. So let's see. I got a hold of Legendary Encounters Firefly. So got a chance to play this. The artwork is not good in this game. They rushed a lot of stuff. The crew strike cards are pretty poor. If you're not familiar with the Legendary system, this is an upper deck. It's a deck building game. The encounter system are kind of self-contained boxes, not related to the Marvel one, with different IPs. So they've done Alien, and they've done Predator, and this is the third one, Firefly. So I would say of those three IPs, sorry to all the fans of the other, Firefly is my favorite of the IPs, so that's what really excited me for this one. But the gameplay, I think, is really good. I really like it. They just changed a couple things different from the others if you've played them. In this one, instead of just getting crew strikes on the characters, you can also have strikes on the ship. So the Serenity is on the playmat that's in there. And then the way it works is you're playing cooperatively, a deck builder, and you're trying to go through three episodes of the show. So each game is three episodes, and the show had 15 episodes, so there's five games in the box, which is more than the other two. I believe Alien was four and Predator was three, so... there's more there, and then you can mix and match, which I'm not even sure is necessary, but it's there. And so you're playing your way through the episodes, but each one kind of ends, and then there's an intermission where you can upgrade the ship, you can heal and repair, and different things like that. So that's really neat. And then lastly, each character, there's the nine characters, I'm not going to run through them all, but there's nine different characters. Everybody plays a character. You have to guarantee that there's five. So if you're only playing with four people, you put a fifth in as, like, they are designated a main character. And then the supporting characters become the card, the crew deck that you're drawing from, where you're buying cards from. And each one has a talent and a flaw. And so you start with a talent card in your deck, which are just generic. Again, poor art. And when you play a talent card, you trigger your talent, which is always draw a card, and then you could get rid of that card to do another ability. But that's a new thing they did here, was activate. So you can choose to activate cards or not, and you can pick the timing that you want to activate them. So it's kind of neat. You can kind of wait till you could get a better effect from that. I mean, the system itself is, you know, these cards are just rolling out, coming down the line, and you're trying to scan them to flip them over. And so we played a mission where you're just flipping everything, and you just can't get it to work. And then the next mission where we flip the two people we have to kill and just kill them immediately. And then the third one, we just couldn't find anything and got totally hosed on the episode. So it definitely has that random factor. The game I played with Brian, which was a five-player game, it was highly exacerbated. Like, we had the one where we won very quickly and the one where we just couldn't do anything. It is a hard game overall. I've had a lot of plays. I've solo played. I've two-playered many times. I've three-playered. And I've five-playered. And the play I had with you, Brian, was the worst of those plays. Solo play was a little tough, too, at times. And sometimes I solo played, too. But the theme is right there. It's cool when you're flipping the characters and remembering, which is what these games are trying to do sometimes, get you to remember the episode and go, oh, they put that in there. Oh, that's a great idea. You know, the snipers that are there, and they sit and they fire at you, and you have to go find them. There's probably, like, balance issues, if you will. Certain characters are really good, and you'd want to have them all the time. And the cards are a little funny in terms of they'll say, like, you know, if Simon's a main character, you can get two more damage. But you didn't pick Simon as a main character, so that card just isn't as good as if he was. So you could kind of min-max that in setting up your deck. So that was a little unfortunate. They could have done a little better balance there. And thinning your deck is hard in this one, whereas it's really good in Marvel Legendary, although there's so many cards that it's hard for me to say that. But most of the time, they had a lot of, like, KO your heroes, and this doesn't have a lot of defeat, which is their term for that. So, but I've really enjoyed it. Again, the look isn't so good. Yeah, it's going to be random, so you got to deal with that random element. You can't always perfectly figure everything out. But of the encounters so far, it's been my favorite one. So Legendary Encounters Firefly, Upper Deck.
Nice. So I've been able to play a game that's come out recently a few times now. Definitely need to get a few more plays in before I get, like, a full review down. But I've been able to play Mansions of Madness from Fantasy Flight Games. And this is a game that's just recently been re-released. It's the second version. The old one had a lot of stuff coming out. Like, there were a lot of expansions and that sort of stuff. You know, and I remember seeing that it was all kind of cluttered, and it seemed kind of like no one was really talking about it. Like, it was a cool concept, but I feel like Betrayal at House on the Hill was getting more talk and more hype, and, you know, that just seemed to be a better system. But now, Mansions of Madness is fully cooperative, basically. I mean, there could be some instances where it's not, but it's fully cooperative right now, where you're playing, you know, these people in, like, an Arkham setting. You know, there's, like, Cthulhu and that sort of stuff and all these creatures, and you're going through these different scenarios playing against what an app basically runs for you as, like, the dungeon master sort of thing. So, you know, the app is kind of giving you, like, these different scenarios that happen, and then it'll kind of guide you, like, you know, oh, this monster appears, or, you know, you try to open up this door and this is what happens, that sort of stuff. And it really, you're kind of stumbling around at first, trying to, like, figure out clues and solve these different puzzles, up to a point where, you know, the story is kind of fleshing out a little bit more, the app is guiding you along that path till you've, you know, tried to accomplish some goal. Basically, you're trying to keep going and get as far as you can without either going insane or becoming, you know, or being killed, basically. So, you know, I've played this a couple times now. I think it's definitely helpful to, like, go into it and kind of have that expectation of, like, okay, we're just hanging out. We don't really care. Like, we want to experience this more than just we want to win this game. You know, I did enjoy it kind of with that mindset. There are a few things that are problematic from my experiences so far. The app is a little fiddly, where I've heard a few people say they'd like a way to have, like, an undo button, you know. Yeah, basically, right. It's like you'll be clicking through these different things that happen. The basic turn is kind of like the investigators go. They, you know, they'll take a couple actions each. Like, usually it's like moving and searching and that sort of stuff. Once everyone's gone, then there's a mythos phase where all the monsters do stuff, you know. And we've had a few times where it's just kind of progress too quickly, so it's like we've skipped the whole, like, investigators phase or something like that, and it goes right to the mythos phase, and all of a sudden we have to figure out a way to, like, kind of fine-tune that, you know.
Yeah,
it would be nice if it was just like, oh, I didn't mean to click that button, I didn't want to go to the mythos phase, let's just hit an undo button and go back to the investigator phase. So, I mean, that would be great, but I think the more plays you get in, the better you'll be at it. But at the same point, you're also playing similar stories each time. I mean, the way the the game runs itself. You do resolve things in different orders, and different things can happen, too, based on what you try to do. You know, for example, maybe there's, like, a book on the shelf, and you could either, like, you know, pick it up and read it, or you could just, like, ignore it or throw it on the floor, you know, like, do all these different things to that book or a couple different things, that, like, in the different scenarios. So then it, whatever you do then kind of guides what happens in the future. But I don't know. I did like Mansions of Madness. It definitely, I guess it's a little darker than something I'd probably get to the table frequently with Rachel, but I don't know. It's got that cool theme. Like, it feels like you're kind of working together and figuring stuff out. You know, there are some neat puzzles. I think once the system gets a little more refined, I think you'll be able to see more and more things that are being used with the app. So I haven't tried it on a phone yet, so I think that might be kind of tough. We've played with like a computer and a laptop and a tablet, and that's a little bit easier. I don't know, like, a phone might be a little bit small for the screen, but you know, either way, I'd definitely be willing to try and keep playing Mansions of Madness.
Nice.
So
yeah, it's a game that came out and I was like, oh, hey, everybody's gonna be excited, and I'm not gonna worry about that one. And then everybody's had positive reviews and plays, and I'm like, I guess I gotta try this game, because it just didn't seem in my wheelhouse, but everybody said how good it was. So it's neat when a game can kind of transcend its theme and still play to people. So that's neat. Awesome. So we mentioned at Gen Con that we picked up Terraforming Mars from Stronghold Games and got a chance to play it. I believe we recorded 30-plus plays with demos, and I feel like I read something like 15 to 20 rule books. So
at Gen Con?
At Gen Con.
Not of specific games?
Right? Not of any game. Not of one game. No, I'm just saying. So, you know, we played this game in the midst of, you know, learning a whole bunch of games and everything. Now, we really all liked it, but we played it at its base level. Everybody was fine with that. Like, don't ramp it up, you know. Like, let's just see what it's like, because we get to the next game and whatnot, and you're trying to play a bunch. But I did ramp it up. I borrowed it, and I played with my wife, two-player, Terraforming Mars, and we put in the corporate era cards. So I believe there's, like, let's just say there's 140 cards, and then you add, like, 70 more. Like, you almost add 50% to the deck with these corporate era cards. And so the 140 cards we had played with originally were, this is a card to terraform Mars, this will increase the temperature, this will add things, this will, you know, maybe up your income. Very direct to terraforming Mars. But these 70 are totally focused on your corporation. Like, oh, you'll gain a bonus to your corporation, or increase your production, or now you get points if you have certain things on the planet, or here's a thing that just lets you draw more cards, or kind of shape your asymmetry of your corporation and build an engine. And oh man, do you build an engine. I mean, it's a slow engine. This is you know, it took us pretty close to 3 hours to play, just two player. Now, one thing with that game, because the end game conditions are the same no matter how many players you have, if you have more people, there's more people contributing to getting up the temperature, increasing the oxygen, all those kind of things. So I'd imagine that would, like, kind of keep the time frame similar for all plays. I'm very interested in trying that. But it was really good. We really enjoyed our play of it. It's a card manipulation game, but the way we played it, it was more like an activity in the sense of you get four cards at the start of every round, and then you can kind of buy those cards, which we typically found you just buy them all. And then you do the best you can with those four. And there isn't really a lot of ways to manipulate a lot of things. But with this version, you start with no production, and you've got to figure all that out. How am I going to produce? How am I going to get production going? How am I going to get these things happening? And what route am I going to be? So now here I am. I'm producing a lot of heat. You know, I'm the corporation that is going to bring a lot of heat to the planet. But, you know, my wife's there, and she's placing a ton of greenery tiles or whatever it is. So you really do specialize, and you feel like a corporation that's adding their piece to the process and trying to do the best. So it was thoroughly enjoyable. I really want to add the card drafting, because now you're talking about seeing more cards and getting the opportunity to say, oh, that'll be great for my engine. And then all the cards inherently have a cost, which you can also discard to gain money from. So sometimes you just say, oh, that card will give me a lot of money, and I need a lot of, I mean, you almost always need a lot of money in the game, but it will work that way. So it was a really good play. The one thing we were considering is my wife and I love Through the Ages, and it scratched that same itch. It's not similar, but it was a similar time length, 2.5 to 3 hours, and, you know, working with cards and resources. And so we wondered, like, at some point, would we, you know, think differently? But there's more... Yeah, there's more direct engine building in this game. Like, Through the Ages, you're trying to balance and compete with certain things. And I'm not sure on that comparison right off the top of my head, but this was neat. The theme is great. I think it's pretty friendly. I don't want to make it sound overly heavy. If people play Race for the Galaxy, where they draw the cards and they, you know, figure out how to work with their cards, I mean, it's not a light game, so we don't want to go there. But I don't feel like it's so heavy, like, oh my gosh, like, you really have to be prepared. So really the only heavy piece, and I'm doing air quotes, to deal with is the time length. Like, you've got to be ready to play for 2.5 hours. So if you have people that wouldn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I would think most gamers would be fine. It's not so heavy. You got to read all the cards, so there's a time to that. But really enjoyed my second play of Terraforming Mars from Stronghold Games.
Yeah, I mean, it almost felt like a sim game. You know, like, mm-hmm. almost like a game where you're just kind of, like, trying to place all this stuff up, and, you know, Mars is just this open sandbox sort of thing, and then you're just able to go and figure stuff out, try to build that engine. And I don't know, that was definitely one of the games that I like. Yeah, maybe it didn't feel like it was one of my favorite from Gen Con at the time, you know, like, while playing it, but then after looking back at it, I definitely want to keep this one around and keep trying it out, testing out the different avenues. So
yeah,
I think the more I think about it, the higher it goes up on the want to play, want to buy list.
And my second playthrough, Mars didn't feel as open. It's actually pretty smartly constructed, where there's a bunch of spaces that you can place tiles on to gain resources, but then there's one right in the middle where you could put a city that would be worth a lot of points at the end of the game. So, I mean, you could argue that sandbox, because do I want resources or do I want points? But if people are going and snagging up all the resources, then you're like, you'll capitalize by putting a city there. So I think it was structured nicely. We were forgetting that you couldn't, like, build where oceans were supposed to be. We made some
that
of
that was just Larry.
Well,
though.
Yeah, it was Larry.
Yeah.
But so I think it was good there. Now, you were considering, the store's considering bringing in.
Yeah, I think copies. We'll be doing a pre-release kit. I need to make sure that we're actually still able to sign up for that, but that would be the hope. It would hopefully be coming in around the same time as the Dice Tower crew.
Right.
So I think it comes with, like, you know, a few games and a demo. So if you're interested, keep your eyes open. I think it's around, like, September 15th, somewhere in that area.
Nice.
So hopefully we can get that in, get some promo cards, and...
Yeah, you know, it'll have promos in it's table. A pre-release before it goes yeah. out. Like, it'll be
a few weeks
before.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, great game, Terraforming Mars. I'm going to stop talking about it now.
All right, the next one I want to talk about, I think we talked about a little bit in the Gen Con episode, but Codenames Pictures from Czech Games Edition. That was another one that, you know, Larry and I actually picked up at the convention, which was kind of neat. They had some promo tiles with them with the game as well. So you could kind of play with a larger grid, but yeah, Codenames Pictures, it's like Codenames, which is kind of that password style game. You know, you've got teams and you're trying to give clues to get people to guess their, like, the team's cards. You know, not everyone knows which cards are associated with which team. Just a very brief overview. We did talk about Codenames, the original game, a while ago, so I don't want to go too in-depth in that, but Codenames Pictures definitely adds some unique stuff to it. You know, you've got a bunch of cards with pictures on them, obviously, right? And these pictures have these kind of weird things going on where there are usually a couple different ideas going on, where it's kind of like a play on two different areas. I'm trying to think of something that... Do you remember anything that jumps out from, like, one of the pictures?
Well, I remember the baby carriage, and then there's, like, a bunch of, like, sheets that are all tied together, like, knotted up.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, the baby escaped by sliding down the sheets. Yeah. Like, there's that kind of thing, or...
Yeah stuff so it's like just kind of unique, like, you know, kind of weird, too, where it's not just, like, the most obvious. It's not just, like, you know, if there's like a picture of a fish, it wouldn't just be a fish. There would be like, you know, a fish with like trees growing on the, I think that was the way with like a turtle. There's like a turtle and there are trees growing on the turtle shell.
Right.
So it was like, you don't just say turtle, like you could use a couple different words to kind of get that association there. So yeah, we've played this a few times, just, you know, Codenames Pictures, mixing it with Codenames. Both of those were fun. I think it's definitely growing on me a little bit, you know, I still might like the base game, like Codenames, a little bit better with just the words, but I don't know. I think it's really cool, and we've had a good time kind of mixing them up. Like I said, like we've made the grid a little differently where it kind of alternates between a word and a picture, and that does make it a little bit interesting too, because when there are just pictures out there, you're basically free to say any word, I believe. Like you can kind of, if there's a picture of that turtle with the trees growing on the back, you can say turtle, but, you know, you'd have to have something else that would probably associate with that as well. Now, all of a sudden, when you're adding cards, like, words in there as well, maybe that's, you have to be worried about those, so you just can't say one of the ones that's on the card.
Right.
So, I don't know, I really like it. I think it's gotten it back out, and it's been a little more fresh on our minds. You know, we've been able to play it a little bit.
Sure, yeah.
So, I don't know, it's been great. We brought it on vacation with the family, so, you know, we even got Joy to play, my mother-in-law, awesome. So yeah.
I know, yeah,
and she's not one to play a ton of games, not that she doesn't like it, I think she just needs something that's letting her be a little bit more free to, like, you know,
just
be there and hang out, kind of.
Sure, well, so that's Codenames.
Yeah, and it was great, and she's getting really competitive, too, she was giving it to us, it was fun, so, yeah, Codenames Pictures is great, and you know, Codenames is great as well, so just, I'd say go out and get them both.
I would just think it would be tough, you know, she's got that southern accent, so she's the clue giver, and she's like, pin! And you're like, oh no, did she say pen, or did she say pin?
Well, it does say you have to, like, you can be
spell
asked
it out.
To spell it out. Or the other team can force you to spell it out. So, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait for the business edition, you know, Codenames Flowcharts, that's going to be really exciting, so that should be good.
I wonder how that would go over. There could be, I could see that being a thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, Codenames Pictures is just a no-brainer to me. Like, why would you not buy it at that price point and mix it in, and if you hate it, then whatever. Like,
right.
I can't even imagine you would hate it, but, like, it's just a no-brainer, you know what I mean? So, it's good. The only way you could possibly know if it's, like, good or bad would be to, like, have two separate control groups, and this one is first time introduced to Codenames with words, and this one with pictures, and see who's enjoying it more. Because you know what I mean?
Right.
So to me, it's a no-brainer. You get it, you throw it all together, you do what we did where you mix them, you play one, you play the other. I wonder if pictures would be better with kids, because they don't have to connect words, but
what
knows
I would
where that
think,
goes.
Like, from what I've played recently, it seems like with pictures, it's, I don't know, I guess I don't want to say that there were a few good clues recently. It's felt a little more limited, like, where you can kind of link a couple. I feel like there are some associations with the words where you can really push it and, like, you know, you can just use that wordplay to really get people thinking of all these, you know, weird avenues and getting them to kind of think in a different sort of mentality. With the pictures, I think it's a little bit more limited where you could try to do that still, but now I think you're stretching it a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's what gives the words a leg up. But
yeah.
I don't know. It's fun to mix them, and you can play with either, and there isn't a problem with that, so.
Yeah, it's such a great game. It's just so good. So I don't know if I would have issue going back and saying that was my favorite game of last year. Even though it's so light and so basic, and it feels like a game that was already invented, you know? There's obviously better heavy games that I'm going to play with a certain crowd, but, like, it's just, I've never seen a game just take off so much, so. Props to CGE, they've got a winner on their hands. Alright. I threw another game in here, because I had to, because I was thinking about it. So I've actually got two more.
Two more?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I only saw one.
Well, I just wrote another one down.
You're doing it off the cuff?
Yeah, I'm going off the cuff. So I mentioned that I bought Lotus, from Renegade Games for my wife, and so we got a chance to play Lotus. So this is a 2-4 player card game where you are building flowers, and you know the theme is you build these flowers, and you know, you're trying to restore a garden and you gain so much power for gaining the flowers, but it's a card game. The cards are beautiful. Every single card is a petal of a flower, and they're all unique, which reminds me of one of my favorite games from the 80s, Titan, where the artist, every single tile, every single picture of any fantasy creature was unique. The board, everything, the rule book, everyone was unique. So this game's the same way. Every petal, you know, there's water droplets on this one. There's a cloud going by on that one. Really nice touch. Beautiful game. And then, of course, you lay these petals out like a flower. So they actually have a little guide to show you, like, oh, if it's going to be a five-petaled flower, it actually gives you the angle so that you can construct that to, you know, to have the 72-degree angle so that it'll wrap around and make 360 degrees. So you see these flowers being laid out. And then the other piece you have is each person has a guardian associated with them, which is an insect. So there's caterpillars and ladybugs and dragonflies and butterflies. And you can put these guardians on the flowers to kind of have like an area control piece. So every card you play from your personal deck, everybody has a personal deck, will give you guardians. As well as you can play like wooden guardians on there, like meeples. What were they? Mesex? So you can put those on there. And then whoever plays the last petal to finish the flower, which there are flowers that are 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, and 7 is the lotus. Whoever plays that last one gets all the petals, and that's just all the cards, and every card's worth 1 point at the end of the game. But whoever has the majority of guardians gets a bonus. So the bonus is you can either just take 5 points, or you can flip a tile, so there's a little engine building in there. So you can make it so your hand goes from 4 to 5 cards now at the end of every turn. Or you can now play unlimited cards to a flower on your turn. So you could, if you have a whole flower in your hand, you could just drop it and build the whole thing. Or you can get your Elder Guardian, which counts as 2 and gives you another Guardian that you can use, so you can kind of play the area control thing. And so, played it, simple game, easy to teach, you know, not really a lot of questions that arise, super fun. Played it with my daughter, played it with my wife, played it with both of them at the same time, introduced it at the library last month, played with various other groups. It's just one of those games. It's just so simple. You can play it with anybody. It's fun. It's pretty. And scores aren't always super close, but nobody, it's not one of those games where you get super frustrated. Area control, that I don't mind. So I'm always so back and forth one. On the area control, you know, which one's going to work, which one isn't.
So this would be the top of your list, like
probably for area control. Yeah, this would probably top there. It's, you know, you get to the end, you're like, I had 48 points. I was like, I had 72. Oh, great game. You know, it just doesn't feel like, oh, you know, it's not too long. It's probably in the 30-minute range. There's a couple other things. There's a neutral deck you can kind of draw cards from, a la Ticket to Ride and stuff like that. But solid game, amazing production. The cards are just beautiful. And just, even though it's basically a themeless game, the theme is so fun with the flowers and the little guardians that you get to put out, and everybody has their own deck. So, yeah, totally 2 thumbs up. Lotus from Renegade Games. So the other one I'm going to throw in here as well is another one I picked up for my wife on a whim. So this was my, like, splurge at Gen Con. The Ravens of Three Saharashi. And that's tough to spell. this one I actually wanted to mention because I saw we have a couple copies in at the store. And it's in a small box. And it's kind of in that small box section by the window. So anybody that's stopped by the store, I just wanted to kind of promote this game because it's pretty fun. And I wanted people to know what it was. It's a very unique 2-player-only card game. So the theme here is you have Feth and Ren. And they're kind of in love. They kind of bumped into each other. And, you know, something's really... Ren's life is really tough. And so he's trying to protect her. So he kind of breaks her out of her bad life. And she passes out. And now he's got her in this, like, bunker place. And there's all these ravens trying to get in. And she's, like, incapacitated, if you will. And he's trying to bring her back by going into her dreams. Obviously, we get into, like, a fantasy realm here. And so he's trying to, you know, get her to write a poem in her dreams, I feel bad, Japanese, Dodatsuku, I don't know it, I'm sorry, it's not a haiku, one of the other ones, and so she has to write this poem, and if she writes it successfully, you win the game, but meanwhile, these ravens are attacking, so Feth probably does like 60% of the game, and Ren does 40%, so it's two-player, it's good to know, but you're not allowed to talk at all. And so Feth is playing these cards. At this point, it becomes pretty abstract. So he's just pulling cards from a deck unlimitedly, but if his deck ever runs out, they lose. And then he's adding them to the Atman, which is just a tableau in the middle of the table. And then when he's done kind of placing these cards abstractly, Ren takes a card and adds it, and there's numbers on them, and then they have abilities, and you can kind of exhaust the cards to use the abilities, and you're trying to complete like numbers to write the lines of the poem. And then after that, Ren's heart, all the cards that are kind of face down in front of Ren that she has to start the game, you have to have one of each color in the Atman. So it's totally an abstract game, completely unique. I mean, I can't even think of what it's like at all. It's like nothing I've ever played. And then the one other thing I'll tell you is it's not really Legacy, but when you win, it says, now you can open this envelope. And there's three envelopes in the game, and they carry the game further, and I won't spoil that for anyone.
Have you opened all the envelopes?
We've opened two.
Okay.
We haven't gotten to the third one yet. And there's a rule we have in question with the crows, because it seemed like you could just not win the game. Anyway, it's not a big deal. I don't think it's a negative on the game. It's just something that we were trying to figure out. Because we may not understand a rule. But it's great. I mean, it's perfect. It probably takes longer than you would think. Like, it looks like it's going to be a 15-minute game, and it gets up there past 30 minutes. But it says 45 on the box. I've got nowhere near 45 minutes, you know? But it's good. It's engaging. You can see a little frustration because you're not allowed to talk, but of course, naturally, you go, duh, 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 you know, you're doing that thing. So it's a really good game. So I'm going to try it again. Ravens of Three Sirhashi. It's not three. It's like T-H-R-I. And it's Osprey Games. So I know we have a couple copies at the store. Check it out. Really enjoyed it if you're looking for a two-player game to play with somebody. And the replay would be really good there, too. So that's what's on our table. Let us know what's on your table. All right, we'll move to our discussion topic here. We want to talk about great gaming nights. So not the nights where somebody says, join me or die, but how you can actually make a great gaming night. And so I'm kind of leaving this wide open in terms of, you know, a night that was really fun unexpectedly, or, you know, how the store structures things to make really great nights. Just what makes a great gaming night? What makes a night really good when you're gaming? What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it starts off with a couple of different things. Like, it definitely helps to have some sort of structure, you know, going into it, where it's like, you know, we know what games we're looking to play. Just kind of giving it that way, like the just those limitations are helpful, where it's not just completely open and people do know, okay, we'll probably be looking to play either this or that depending on how many people. And I think one of the most difficult things, you know, at the store or at different group events or such, it's difficult when it's this huge group and there really is no one kind of like saying, this is what I'm playing, anyone that wants to join me, hop in. You know, like, it's mostly, like, how do we work this game group to, like, you know, how do we all play together, or how do we split to, what do people want to play, and it's always left kind of open. But, well, not always, I guess I shouldn't say not always. A lot of the time, when there isn't that structure, it feels like it's just, you know, waiting on one person to kind of make that determination. And, you know, sometimes that does feel a little out of place when it isn't, you know, brought into place prior to that. Like, when there isn't that structure before the event, it feels a little bit more stressful and tense and that sort of stuff. So I think that structure is key, you know, with those limitations, really knowing what's on the agenda, what are people trying to play, and, you know, getting that sense of who's going to be there too.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. The structure is good, and I think helping people to have expectations, like, hey, this is a night. If you want to come, there's a lot of new gamers, or, you know, cousins are around or something, you know, whatever it is. Friends came in from out of town. They're not really gamers, but if you guys want to come over, we're probably going to be playing a bunch of party-like games, or there's going to be seven of us, so we're going to be playing games with seven is going to be the plan, you know? As opposed to, like, hey, it's just a couple people coming over, you know, we're dying to break Arkwright out, and then after Arkwright, if our brains can still handle it, we're going to be playing Terra Mystica. Like, that's a different mindset, right? Or even the, yeah, it's a whole bunch of heavy gamers, so we're actually running these two games. You could jump in either one, you know, kind of thing. So that structure in place, so people kind of have expectations, makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, so, I mean, with that in mind, you definitely want to know, like, yeah, you want to give people, like, that idea of what they're looking at. You know, what the avenue is, like, what, not only what mentality should people have when they're going into a game, but also, you know, like, what that environment's going to be like as well. Because, you know, there are certain instances where it's just, like, you go into a game and you've got expectations of it being of one type, and then all of a sudden it's the opposite. You know, maybe it's, like, you're thinking it's going to be a heavy strategy game and you want to win. Or and then maybe it flips the table and you kind of, like, it's reversed, so all of a sudden you're hopping in and it's completely luck-based. You know, there's literally nothing to it. And then I think the worst part is going into it thinking it's going to be something different than it is. You know, and obviously, like, we play a lot of new games. Mm-hmm. So, just kind of knowing going in, like, okay, we're going to be figuring this out. Just kind of do what you can. Like, the key thing is not that winning aspect. It's really making sure everyone's engaged, everyone's able to, like, you know, figure it out. So, you know, we can kind of determine, is this a good game? Do we want to play this again in the future with everyone knowing what this is? You know, we've had a few games where, you know, the setup is wrong or, like, the rules aren't completely, you know, realized by a few people or something like that. And all of a sudden, we get to the end and it's like, oh, that was brutal. Like, we hated that one. But that's a lot of the expectations that are in place. So I think that's just key, like, kind of, you know, if you're sitting down and you're trying to teach a game that you don't really know, you should probably say that beforehand. It's like, if you guys want to stick with this, I'm not really familiar with it, but I want to play this, so if other people have that same mentality, feel free to join me.
Yep.
It's easier said than done, obviously, like, you know, because it could just take, like, a bad day at work or something like that, and all of a sudden it's like you go into it and you want to find that, like, that drama or that... take out that aggression somewhere. So, obviously, there are other circumstances that, you know, might make it difficult for the game table. But I think that one's key. And then the environment. I think the one that pops into my mind is when we played, like, Alchemists or something like that. Or, you know, where it's just, like, we were playing in, like, a very loud environment. And it's definitely not one that was conducive to that. You're, like... you're looking at all these iterations of what could be, and all of a sudden, you know, there are people screaming in the background, there are kids playing Magic off on the side, and that's fine, we welcome that at the store, but oftentimes there are two styles of gameplay that do not work in conjunction. You know, even at Gen Con, when we were playing Covert, which is a fairly, like, a medium-heavy Euro.
Fuse.
And we're listening to the soundtrack of this, like, very stressful, fast-paced, you know, time bomb basically going off. And it's like, oh, gosh, these don't mix. So I think that's just huge. It's just, like, you need to know where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing.
Yeah, I think game selection comes in key there. Like, I'll notice, like, Thursday nights at the store... we tend to be mixing, playing with more people now. Like, it kind of just tend to be, oh, the same of us that are always playing at somebody's house are now playing at the store that night. Mm-hmm. And everybody else kind of playing, and they're happy, and we're in our group. But we tend to be mixing a little bit more. And I try to purposely not bring a game that I just don't know. Like, I just kind of glanced over the rules today. And it may be good, it may be bad, you know, but it plays seven, and it may play in 30 minutes, or it may be 3.5 hours. I don't know, you know?
Granted, like, you don't feel comfortable doing that anyway.
I don't feel comfortable doing that anyway. Right.
I mean, it's definitely more of a focus when it is with a bunch of people that we don't know. It's a lot easier to get, you know, those medium weight games to the table, too. I'd love to be playing, like, you know, all the heavy Euros that we have on, like, a Thursday night, but it just... it doesn't make the most sense.
Yeah, it's not that environment's tough at certain times too.
Yeah, plus we want to be welcoming to other people too. Yeah. Like, it's if you sit down and you're playing one game a week, that's dedicating the entire time that you're there. Like, you know, it's not a bad thing. I would love to do it a little more frequently, but you do get into that, like, that blinders mode where you just, you're focused on what you're focused on.
Right.
And nothing else really matters. Like, you're not engaging in other things. You're not kind of, you know, going around and socializing. It's more of, you're there to play that game. So, I don't know. I enjoy that, but it's just, it's not the right environment at the store all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And then, of course, people. People are going to make the game night. So, you know, part of that is not like who you're inviting, like, oh, bad people versus good people, but just based on what your part of your structure and expectation right. is going to be around those people. Now, my house is very open, so it tends to be like, oh, two people showed up. Oh, these people sent me a text. They're coming over. Hey, do you want to come up the hill, too? I mean, if you don't, guys don't know, Brian lives not even a mile away from me, so it's like anytime we're doing something, we'll throw a text to each other and see. And if that works, and so you really have to, you know, play to those people and who's it going to be and what's going to work best. So, you know, paying attention. I think one of the keys here, too, is, like, I don't think that a dud of a game will make a bad night. So, like, if you play a game, it's like, oh, that was bad, that didn't go over well. That doesn't always make for a bad night. You know, I wouldn't be afraid, even sometimes where I've said, hey, is everybody good? Like, this isn't the best, this is going slow, we're kind of getting tired. Maybe it's getting towards 10 or 10:30, but people either want to leave or they're going to stick around for one more, but this game may go on. Does everybody want to make this the last round? And I've had nights where we do that, and then the next game we play, like a Code Names or something, picks all the energy in the room back up, and everybody remembers, like, oh, that last game was great. So, yeah. You know, I'm not afraid of doing something like that to really buy back a great gaming night.
It also does get exhausting, though. You know, if it's, like, a few games in a row that are duds, now all of a sudden you're talking about, like,
right.
You know, that first one was rough, but it was doable. And then the second one kind of makes it, like, a little more, like, what are we doing here? And then, like, if you ended on a rough one as well, then you've kind of got that lasting impression of that night of, you know, a few tough games to get through. So, you know, you do want to cap it with something that's strong, that leaves that lasting impression, like that kind of jump up and, you know, like that cool environment where it's just everyone's engaged.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, the other part with the people was like, the other night, I had a gaming night. I've never played so many mini games or light, or whatever you want to call them, like party games. We must have played 15 games that were all 20 minutes, like at the most. You know, it was Welcome to the Dungeon and No Thanks and Say Anything. And we played the Goonies card game and, like, I don't even remember what else we played. But it was, just, you know, multiple No Thanks. I mean, people just kept wanting to play No Thanks. But people are laughing. They're having a good time. There's meta being built with inside jokes. People say, of course, people start saying No Thanks in different languages. People start using curse words. Nobody I really know would use curse words, you know, but just like, and it's funny, you know, people are doing that. And it's just building up and the night just keeps going. And then, of course, you know, you start playing for a night for 3 hours in these mini games and people start referencing the stuff from earlier. And so really that was the people, like those games are great, but they were conducive to that night.
Right.
And that was really a neat night to me because so many times the night is about the games, and I want to have fun with the people too, but this one was really the people, and the games enhanced the socialization with the people. So that was a really, like, different night. I think that's what stood out. It was a great night in gaming because it was different. The people were leading the games as opposed to the kind of the games. I don't know. That sounds bad, as if I care about games more than people, which I never do. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't matter that we had to really get to a certain one.
Right.
In that environment. It might be a dud on another night where people it never worked. You know, we had a night at the store, we just kept playing games with 8 players, and they just were always like, well, somebody kind of randomly won that one, and somebody, you know, and it kind of gets slow, like, okay.
Well, that's also knowing, like, the people that you're playing with. You know, just, like, figuring out what makes the most sense. You know, like that game full of, or that night full of fillers or whatever, like, I would have enjoyed it, but it wouldn't have been great for me. Like, it would have been fun, but it wouldn't have been great. Like, granted, it could have been, like, maybe just, like, the interaction with people, like, that might be fun, but it's not, like, it would be a great social night rather than a great game night, you know? If that makes sense?
Yeah.
So,
Sure.
And I'm sure the same would be could be said for many people, where it's just like, oh, that doesn't really sound like any fun. Like, I don't want to be playing all these filler games. And that's obviously going to be the case where a great game night for some people might be doing that, like sitting down at a table playing 3 hours of, like, you know, stress-inducing, like, you know, stocks and
right.
balancing your checkbook, basically. That might be enjoyable, a great game night for some.
Oh, absolutely. No, I guess my point was I didn't expect a night of right. those fillers to be so good, and because of the people yeah. who just bought into the games, they made it fun. So I think that's kind of one of my points. Hey, sometimes you just got to buy into the game to make the night more, you know, like, see what you can do. Of course, I keep talking about next year I want my 10x10 to be related to people playing board, you know, with board games as opposed to the games themselves. So I think about these things.
You're not going
to
be, like, doing a 9x10, 10x1 sort of thing next year.
But I actually remember we played Say Anything one night, and everybody was surprised that we had a bunch of gamers, and I pulled out, like, yeah. a party game. But everybody bought in, and everybody right. was like, wow, that was really fun. People remember playing that and having a lot of fun. And so, you know, it was surprising. It was like, that was, you know, good. So I think that's part of it. Now, of course, it could be the reverse for somebody else. Like, hey, you got to show up and buy in. I remember actually playing here at your house, and Josh showed up to play Rococo with us.
Yeah.
Who doesn't typically play anything heavy, and that's a heavy game. But he knew what it was. He knew the people. He knew it would be late. And he loved it. So he yeah. bought in to the fact that, like, wow, I just played a 2.5-hour cerebral game, and I don't do that as often, you know, heavy. Careful with the word cerebral, because that'll make you think. but he knew, and he bought in, and that made that night great for him. You know what I mean? So I think that's important. You have to have that yeah. mentality. Which, of course, we set up with the structure in the games with
right.
things. So.
And kind of looping back to the store, I think that has been, that's been a great environment where, you know, it's definitely, like, the dynamic does change based on who's there. Sometimes, you know, it's easier to get into a game than others, but I think it's been a great environment where people can kind of hop in. You know, there are a lot of those lighter-style party games yeah. or filler games or whatnot, but I think there are enough groups that kind of have broken off and are playing, you know, longer games or, like, you know, those deeper ones that it's enjoyable for a mix. And I'd like to think it's pretty open. Obviously, like, I guess I haven't become fully ingrained with, like, everyone at the, like, the meetup group. It just, you know, it's tough to be there consistently enough to really feel like that's, you know, my group in that I'm yeah. in, you know. Because obviously, like, there are other things that they do, and it's just tough to be a part of it all the time. But I'd like to think, you know, if someone's walking in and they want to hop into a game, you know, we'll be there to kind of play whatever there is. Obviously, there might be a couple exceptions. I don't want to go into a game that I know I don't want to play.
Yeah.
Because then my mentality will kind of be like, oh, I really don't want to be doing this. You know, and it's a little different if it's like, you know, teaching some people. I think that would be a lot easier. Just like, all right, I don't want to play this game, but I'll do this for you guys because it's a great one to learn. You know, I could totally see myself just, like, sitting down, breaking out Munchkin or something, and playing it with some people that just walked in the door. I wouldn't mind that at all. I don't want to do that, but I will, because they're different people in different places of life, and I think that would be a great way to introduce a bunch of, like, people to the hobby.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think the meetup group has been great. Obviously, the people kind of make that up, too, where it's, like, it is dependent on those people kind of reaching out to others. It's sometimes tough, like, you know, any sort of group can feel like it's like, kind of clicky, in a sense. But I think just kind of hanging out, being in that area, it's felt like there have been relationships made that are, like, you know, pretty good friendships now. Yeah. So I think that's amazing. Along with that, we've also been having, like, a bunch of, like, longer game sessions where it's, like, a full 24-hour marathon-style thing.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, yep.
And I think that's great. It's just kind of forcing us to, like, say, like, all right, we're here, we're dedicated to playing board games. We don't want to stop. We want to keep going and keep playing games with new people, trying out all these different things, and just building on those relationships. So that's led to, like, a bunch of great game nights, game days, game mornings, all that sort of stuff in one, where there is a little bit of that structure, but it's also just, a bunch of people hanging out and having a great time.
Yeah, definitely. No, and, you know, one of the things I was going to say is, you know, for some of those things, when you do those longer game days, what makes them great is, like, camaraderie. Mm-hmm. So, like, when we do the 24 hours, there's, like, the Midnighters who are there, like, they're there the whole 24 hours, and so they're kind of spurring each other on. And the store kind of creates this great environment where people are like, let's play together. Now let's have a little time apart from each other. Now let's play together again. There's kind of that accordion thing going on. So, you know, that's a good thing that people can do. I can even think, like, we've done a couple where we've, like, shown up and, like, opened the store pretty early. You know, you've let us in and we've done, like, a game. Yeah. And that's nice. Like, we kind of been given the gift. Like, our wives will help take care of the kids and we kind of have that whole day. So there's that, like, stress-free zone that really helps you to kind of play, and you get that long day, and again, you start going back to those things, you build that camaraderie, like, oh my gosh, we've been up to this since 7 a.m., but by 7 p.m., you know, there's a lot of funny stuff you're talking about and everything. The other big thing is food, and drinks make a big difference in terms of that, so I know for me, like, I always, you know, try to have something fun for people, whatever it is, and I think the store's been really good with that. With the 24 hours tends to be bring in coffee or something, or the meetup group usually brings in food and they plug in all their hot plates and all sorts of things. And very simply at the store, you know, there's that book of places you can order so that you can, you know, I mean, it sounds funny, like, oh, so people never leave. But just so they don't have to leave, they can keep having that great night, and there's easy access to places that'll deliver to them and have food, or like the 24-hour events where you just kind of provide some food for people so that they have that environment, because that can make a big difference for people. You know?
I mean, that is key. Like, it's definitely
not on my board games, but
it's definitely key. Yeah, to eat, you know, have a few meals, just kind of like, especially if it is a longer game night or game day. You know, game nights are great too if it is kind of built around that, like, you know, party type atmosphere where it's just like, you know, it's a relaxing, stress free environment. You could eat some pizza or something, like, just have some food and then play some games as well. It's definitely key on the, like, the extended game sessions to, like, make sure you eat, you know, kind of similar to, like, a convention where it's like, if you don't, like, you can forget to eat, but do not forget to eat, because
your body will tell you when you're passing out, like,
or you're just having like a brutal headache or something, you know, like one of those things. It's definitely key to eat and to stay refreshed, get some drinks, and you, like, you know, drink some water and that sort of stuff, just so you do feel good capping it off, you know, because you want to have a good mindset, a good attitude the whole time. It's easier to have a great mindset when you're, you know, thinking clearly through, like, while you've got, like, you know, water in you and food in you and that sort of stuff. So
and I think too, you know, I don't think it's bad to take charge, you know, especially if it's your night or whatever, because I'll do that sometimes. Like, people are there to play games, but people are slowly trickling in, and there's, like, the kitchen effect at my house. I have a pretty big kitchen, and people are just kind of hanging around, and they're talking, and they're, you know, I don't want to, like, be like, okay, you've been here for 1 minute, now you need to be playing a game, but, you know, they'll always laugh where I'll say, hey, are we just going to sit around and talk, or are we going to play games? And because that's a game night, I'm trying to get everybody games because that's, you know, going to create more things for people to do. And so they'll kind of make fun of me, like, you don't want anybody to socialize, like, it's all about, but, you know, but I think people mostly appreciate that. So even when you have that larger group, you know, if it's conducive to your group, saying, hey, you know, we're going to break to these two games now. I'm going to play this. Who wants to play this with me? That person's going to, almost like two captains, you know, when you're playing sports. Like, I'm a captain, they're a captain. And I think overall people will appreciate that. You have to walk that line of who you're with and, you know, not being rude. But I think, you know, somebody to kind of keep things moving works well. If you have a longer day, like one of those 24 hours, it's a lot easier to push things. It's like, well, we're here for 24 hours. We might as well play everything. You know what I mean? Like, it's not as big of a deal usually unless people are slowing down, like in the Year of the Dragon.
It also seems like a different sort of mentality. So if we're at the store and we're playing, I feel like it's a lot easier to just kind of hop right back into a game. You know, if, like, we're at your house or something like that, there are a couple different, you know, like, it's more, I don't know, like, what's the word? It's kind of more tangible. Like, it's, like, you are at a social event more so than, like, you're not at a GameStar, you know?
Right.
Like, you're hanging out, having a great time. I could see, like, at your house or something like that, there are people that aren't necessarily, you know, there for gaming all the time, you know.
No, like, we kick those people out.
You know what I'm saying, though, right?
Yeah, I do.
There are people there that want to be social, and maybe gaming isn't their highest priority. Whereas at the store, I think we're like the store is going to kind of bring in people where gaming is kind of up there. You know, like it's a priority for them. Obviously, like sure. People might be more so, but still, people are there to play games. Whereas, like, you know, at a party or something, like at your house, a game night, there's still more, like, it's closer to just being that social atmosphere. And that's kind of that fine line, I think, what you're trying to get at, where it does need a little bit more of that focus where, you know, maybe you're guiding people kind of saying, like, you know, hey, this is a game night, we should be playing games.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess that's where I'm just trying to say the store seems a little easier to kind of focus
right,
that.
Yeah, people are already ready.
Where you're not dragging in people that aren't wanting to play games already.
Awesome. Yeah, so tell us about some of your great game nights, something you did at home, something at a store, whether it's the Portal or a different store that you play at. Right. Let us know what you think makes a great game night or just a great game night that you remember. You can email us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. All right, we'll move on to what we love about ... And we've done a lot of different game types or styles or genres, so we're moving on to some more topics. So I thought it'd be good here to talk about what we love about board game art or card game art or art in games, whichever way you want to kind of headline that. And I'll kick us off here with a little bit of this. So this whole topic brings me all the way back to last year when I was pre-ordering a game and telling everybody, like, look at this game. Look at the art. The art is beautiful. This is going to win.
No.
This is going to win art of the best board game art of the year. And people are like, well, what about this game? How do you know? Blah, 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 blah. I was like, look at the art. And even my wife said, when she saw the art, yeah, go ahead. Pre-order that game. That looks fun. Looks fun.
Has she said that about any other games ever?
Oh, she's definitely looked at games and said, yeah, I'll play that. It looks pretty.
Has she told you to specifically pre-order?
Oh, no. Okay. No. But Terraforming Mars that we played, I thought, oh, this looks so nice. Yeah. And she looked at the board, she's like, that doesn't look pretty. But once you put the tiles out, it looks good. So I was okay on that one. And that's not her only thing. I don't want to paint her in that picture. But, you know, she has that piece. Paint her in that picture. So the game was Ashes. Rise of the Phoenixborn from Plaid Hat Games. And sure enough, from Dice Tower Awards, it won Best Art of the Year. And the art
if that
is
counts
just
for anything. Does that?
It counts for bragging rights big time. And the art is just so evocative. I mean, even the graphic design has a piece to do with it, with that white card, with the art standing out, and all those kind of things they did. So Fernanda Suarez, I met her last year at Gen Con, and I told her this story. She, like, started to cry that, like, my wife liked it. And even in there, I think a key piece for the art was, like, the women are, like, properly clothed, which I think was appealing for people. So I think, I just think art can draw somebody into a game that they may. I want to be careful because my wife likes 1v1 card games. That is something that she likes to do. So I don't want to say, like, otherwise wouldn't have played, because she does play 1v1 card games, but anyway, that was something to think there. So I think that's a big piece for art, is it draws you in. I mean, I feel like, why would you not have good art? Like, what would go otherwise, you know, in terms of that? Now, I just talked about Legendary Firefly having poor art, and I still, once I played the game, I was able to kind of ignore it and play through, and the structure's good. So
frustrating, the box art is I really like the box art of that game.
It is great box art. Yeah, and even people pulled out cards to me that were like, this one's really good, this one's...
Yeah.
So you kind of find the good ones as opposed to find the bad ones, which is interesting. People
but
were kind
of
fishing
it's
for
it's also
that.
An interesting... Like, it's a matter of perspective on that, too.
Oh, absolutely,
I mean,
yeah.
Because there are people who approve that. So there has to be some side that kind of does... That thinks that does have good art.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's, like, a calling that's saying, like, this is great art, this is amazing art, but, you know, it definitely has something that that gives some sort of, like, you know, it doesn't work for us, maybe, but, I don't know, maybe for someone it does.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't like kind of cornering it that way, even though, like, it's, I guess it's kind of the majority sort of thing where most people kind of have that same issue with it. And it just doesn't speak to you as, like, the same way that, like, you know, the show would speak to you. It doesn't have that direct correlation there.
Right.
So there's a little bit more of a barrier than there should have been, I guess.
Yeah. Now, obviously, a box cover has shelf appeal, right?
Right.
So you're drawing people into that. So if I see, you know, a Star Wars cover with stormtroopers getting shot and somebody's got a lightsaber, like, that's so exciting. Like, oh, I want to be there, right? And if you see a guy, like, staring off into space holding a scroll in his hand, you're like, oh, my gosh, I want to be sitting silently next to that guy. Thinking.
Is there a
myself.
Game that you're thinking about with that? I've never seen that.
Just seemed actually. Like a good chance to take a jab at you.
A guy staring into space with a scroll. I do want to play that
I
game.
I want to be in cloth sitting next to that guy.
I'm picturing what I would like in that game, too.
So, you know, but there could be that element where a cover obviously draws people in. But even once you open it, you know, there are quote-unquote, you know, dry Euros that have great boards, you know, that just look so good, and there's so much going on that even though it's kind of a realistic picture, there's not like a lot of high energy from the picture, it really draws you in. Like, we did not really like Legends of Andor, but that board we had some disdain towards Legends of Andor, but that board is really good. I mean, how it yeah. creates that whole environment for you, and it kind of sweeps to the side.
And that might be kind of along the line for my stance on that. You know, the more I'm thinking about it, the less I like board game art. Because it's very deceptive. It can very easily drag you into a game that you don't want to be playing, but you think it's going to be. You know, it kind of sets that expectation. And it's frustrating because most of the games that really click for me are games where that is going to be in the opposite direction. You know, almost there's like, they're extremely low expectations because the art doesn't jump out at you.
Right.
So it's like kind of that reverse thing where it's like, you know, that does not look like there's any sort of engagement. There's no interaction there. It seems like that art is just kind of thrown in there for whatever reason. And then playing it has the reverse effect where it's just like, oh, that was amazing. I got past the art and then just looked at the game.
Sure.
You know, obviously, like, I think there have been more games that have fooled me the other way, where it's just like, this looks so beautiful, I really want to play this, and then I find myself not liking it as much. You know, like I think there are so many, like, great games that jump out. You know, like, and even good games that I think are going to be better. I think, like, Takedo or something like that just has that kind of subtle, like, that looks really beautiful. And I was expecting more than what I should have from that game.
Right.
It's still a fine game, but it's not the deepest game. Like, it doesn't really have what I was hoping from that minimalistic sort of thing, that style. You know, like, I'm not knocking that game at all.
No.
But I think I wanted to like it more than I did because I had high expectations, you know, and even something like Seasons, like, I think that looks amazing. Like, I want to get invested in that theme. I want to be part of that, you know, like, kind of feel like I'm in that world. And then I sit down and play that game. And I think that's probably more components than art that's really dragged me in for that one. Like, I think the components look amazing and, you know, the art kind of gives you, like, some cool feel to it. Maybe it's not the best board game art, but it does kind of make me want to like it more than I do.
Yeah.
So.
I think of a company like Yellow, and they just, I mean, their art is just great. Like, every game is top-end art. You know what I mean? They just, they go all out for doing art. And they pretty much make family games. I mean, there's nothing beyond a family game there. There's not much. So, you know, there are games where I've just looked at that art and just seek it out, and then it's pretty light. You know what I mean? It's a neat game. I don't dislike their games, you know what I mean? But, like, we played Sea of Clouds, and that was good for what it was. Where, you know, it's a different style of drafting, but it's nothing that's like, oh my gosh, that's amazing, you know what I mean? That's crazy. But then, like, I kept trying to get Big Book of Madness, because I love that art, I love that theme, it looks so good. And I was surprised when I got it that it was actually heavier than a family game. Like, that's pretty much their heaviest game. And so that was kind of, like they'd almost fooled me by that point. Like, oh no, our art and production is crazy, you know, on par with like a Fantasy Flight game, but we're light games. But then when I got to that game, it was pretty thinky. It was pretty intense, you know. So
I mean,
they kind of threw me off there.
Medieval Academy. I guess I've heard kind of both sides. I think the art is kind of cool. Like it's, you know, I could see it not working for everyone. I really like how, you know, like the lower value cards in that game for each suit or whatnot kind of show like, you know, like ones show like a knight in like this really, you know, bad armor with like a wooden sword, and it kind of progresses all the way up to like the five card in the knight is like a, you know, fully suit, like a knight in full armor with like a great sword, and he's looking very like, you know, he looks like he's a very strong knight that can go into battle or something like that. And I think that was cool. I guess that's getting into more of the, like, you know, like using the art to kind of showcase those differences.
Right.
You know, so, I don't know. I really do like, I think I like what it accomplished through the art more than the, like, you know, like the face value of it.
Yeah. And it's hard because there's, it's pretty much, we, you know, I don't know if we take it for granted, but, like, games are going to have good art, these, you know, decent art. I should be careful. No. They're going to try to have something to evoke their theme of what they've decided. Somebody passed it off. So, I mean, we're not no longer the days where you're just going to get a box that just writes the name of it, and you open up and there's a bunch of pieces of paper in there, and there's not, you know, nothing to go with that. It just doesn't exist in board games as much anymore. And I think if we got to that point, we would really be like, oh my gosh, there's nothing here. You know what I mean? You want some piece of art, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I can't imagine what people, like, what companies are paying for for that. Like, what those commissions would look like. You know, because there's a ton of work that goes into, like, you know, so many of those games. It's impressive. I wonder, there are definitely some games where it's kind of questionable. Like, you know, like, even, like, some great abstracts that have been coming out. Like, it's like, they're utilizing the best aspect of it, you know, if you call that art, you know, like, I'm thinking of, like, Hive or something like that, where it's, like, you know, these tiles that kind of have all these different bugs and stuff etched in there, and it looks really good, you know, like, it, you know, that's kind of on that fence. Right. I don't know if that's necessarily art in the same way that I'm thinking
even
of
the
it.
Weight of the tile to add, like, a...
But that's a beautiful, like, the components are beautiful with that, and it looks... looks really cool, but it's still, like, I don't know. Is this getting into, like...
stones on the playground kind of thing.
Yeah, you could be doing it like that. I guess it would kind of go into, like, an argument for, like, chits or for miniatures, right? Like, now we're getting... now it's going down.
No, we're not going there. We're not going there, because that's components.
Yeah, but isn't that part of the art aspect of it, too?
Well, like, it can be, but I'm just... pictures.
Yeah. No, yeah.
But so then the one that's interesting to me that I think of that we both love, and a lot of people love it, is Glory to Rome. Mm-hmm. And Glory to Rome has two very distinct versions. Right. It has the absolute whimsical, hand-drawn, silly, you know, comic, almost over-the-top, like, art. And then it has the black box edition that is very elegant and sheen and basic. And it's really interesting in perspective in that game, because I think of that game as just a wacky, like, here's these cards with all these purposes, and you've got to try to figure out this puzzle, and oh my gosh, his engine is so powerful now, we got to try to stop that, oh no, we can't, oh, I just got a power card, like, and glory to Rome, you know, like, that's how I think of that game. But other people think of it as, like, an elegant design. You have all these choices and options, and you're working on your engine, and you want your engine to outperform. So, and they can almost come at it from that, so that elegant, it's like elegant to them, whereas I think of it as like crazy. Like, there's, so that crazier, whimsical art makes sense to me. Like, this is a game where you're, you know, you're pitching cards from your hand, and you're drawing things from other people, and you're trying to, you know, stop things. But other people are, so that craziness makes sense, but other people are thinking, like, no, this is very, like, like, you have all these options, and you're trying to figure them out. So it's interesting how just people's perspective of how they perceive the structure of the game makes them look at the art.
Yeah, but I mean, even something like that, I don't think I could picture it readily without the, like, the old style art.
Yeah.
You know, the one that I was introduced to. That's
good art.
Glory to Rome to me.
The actual art.
So that's glory to Rome to me. Whereas the other one, if I were introduced to the other one first, that would be glory to Rome to me. Like, you know, I don't think the art is the one that drives it. I think it's just that nostalgia that kind of focuses on, like, which one is gives me that feeling of when I learned that game, what I loved about that game when I learned it, you know, like those different things. You know, even figuring out something like that, like those complex games where it's just like you have no idea to start and then all of a sudden it clicks. You know, whatever helps you associate with that moment of, like, realization is pretty special.
Right.
So, I guess yeah, it would be nice if art had, like, a tangible impact. Like, it seems like it's really more in that subtle way of, like, you know, guiding your opinion or whatnot. So, I guess, I don't know. I guess I've turned on it. Art is fun and cool.
I definitely think it has a tangible impact on me. But it won't... I mean, like the Legendary Encounter, it won't push me so far to not try. I gotta be careful if it's something I really don't like, though. Like, I was just sifting through games today and probably taking a look and going, woo, there's nothing there, so let's pass on that one. So it'd be interesting, but...
I mean, I would try a game based solely on art. I would try that. Like, if it looked amazing, I would try a game based solely on that. But to get that second play, it would need to have something there.
Yeah.
So, who's to say, like, that's... Which is tough, because, again, what we've kind of been saying, like, maybe the art forces me away from it, and getting that right. first play would be amazing, but it never happened. You know, like, yeah, right. it's... I guess it's just, it's worth it to put in, you know, put in some time, make it worthwhile, and really get people to, like, be attracted to get, you know, get people engaged with that first play so they can learn to, like, you know, learn that game and love that game.
There you go. So that's what we love about, or are learning to love about, board game art. Let us know some of your favorite board game covers. That you'd like. All right, there we go. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 27. Had some good discussions there, lots of games. We're back at it after Gen Con. I'm about to ready to pick up teaching again, so life gets busy. But that's good. The busyness lets us appreciate time to get the game and hang out with people and stuff a little bit more. So... Good episode, Brian. Why don't you fill us in on a couple things as we head out here that are in the store coming in soon?
Yeah, so like we had mentioned, Mansions of Madness is around. That's available at the store to be purchased. Captain Sonar just recently came out. We've got a couple of copies left. I think it's tough to find some now. Like, I think that's been doing pretty well. So Captain Sonar's around. A couple legendary games. So Legendary Encounters Firefly, like you had mentioned.
Yep.
Also Legendary Big Trouble in Little China. Those are some fairly new releases.
Civil War?
Yeah, that was...
Oh, that came out already.
These other ones did too. That was pre-Gen Con, though. I think we got it at the store. These other ones, or maybe it was the same week. I'm kind of rambling now, but Dead of Winter, The Long Night, that one just came out. We've got a bunch of copies, and we're excited to get that to the table. King of New York Power Up Expansion, that's going to be coming out soon, hopefully. We need to see, like, what the... Originally, I think it was scheduled for August, but, you know, maybe things get delayed all the time. Welcome Back to the Dungeon, another game that should be coming out, hopefully shortly. We were hoping to see this at Gen Con, but, you know, it never materialized. They didn't have it, so I don't know the story there. But I want to play that game.
Yeah, it's so good.
Islebound from Red Raven Games. Talk about great art. Red yes. Raven Games have great art in them, so... And they've got good games to follow that.
Yeah.
So that one's around. That one's at the store. Hit Z Road from Asmodee and Space Cowboys. I don't know as much about that one, but we've got a copy there at nice. The shop.
And it's a Martin Wallace game.
Yeah. And the last one that kind of jumped out to some people, maybe, Bill and Ted's Excellent Board Game from Steve Jackson Games. Again, one I don't know a ton about, but I figured we'd let you know that it's there. It's at the portal. So if you're interested, give us a call, check it out, and yeah, we'll be around.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's what it's gonna
be. All right. Awesome. So we had an excellent episode. Thanks for joining us on episode number 27. Join me or die. Talking about great gaming nights and board game art and lots of games we played. Hey, don't forget the Game Days with the Dice Tower. That's going to be September 15th, 16th, 17th. We're really going all out for this, so we're excited. We want you to come, invite people, and just come and play games with us and hang out with Tom and the crew from Dice Tower. We're so glad that they're going to make the trip up here. So should be a really good time. But until we see you again, I am the Brant, and with me is
your co-host, Brian.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is the product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on August 26, 2016. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.